This is a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat with guest Adam Turla of Murder by Death. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. This is another edition of No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chats. And today we actually are right by the waterfront, Lake Erie at least, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, and joining me today from the band Murder by Death, go ahead and introduce yourself.
My name's Adam, and I sing and play the guitar for Murder by Death.
All right. And this is actually the second time I've had the opportunity to meet you.
Yeah, the last time I saw you earlier.
Yes, we were down at Musica. Got a great article out of that. It was a wonderful show. And
it's pretty drunk.
Well, that'll happen, right?
Yeah. Keep going into bars. Keep walking out drunk.
Well, luckily the alcohol is limited here at the Rock Hall. I don't know if that's sort lucky of. Or not, but there are plenty of bars right around downtown Cleveland for afterwards.
Sure.
So you have a musical treat in store for us tonight, I hear. Before we get into anything else,
sure.
Any sneak preview?
No, it's just something that I thought of. It's a musical reference that I thought about doing like 6 years ago, and we just never got around to it. And it's just something funny for us and for the people who notice it. Hopefully get a couple laughs out of it.
Okay.
Nothing crazy.
Okay.
It's very appropriate that we're doing it for the first time at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
So. All right, great. And speaking of here at the Rock Hall, we are standing in the shadow of the hall itself.
Yeah.
That's the crazy little circular disc coming off the side.
Yeah, it's a cool building.
It is a great building, and we were all really happy when it got built here after so long of not knowing whether it would be here or New York or whatever.
Oh, is that what they were saying?
Yeah, well, for years, you know, they did the induction ceremonies in New York.
Oh, okay.
And getting the funding up to build the building in Cleveland was always a problem, but they, you know, they finally did it. And
I like the idea of getting it out of the big city, you know, that's got a million things already, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's just like give people a reason to come here to see the Midwest.
Absolutely, and you know, the reason it was set here is because the term rock and roll actually was coined here in Cleveland by Cleveland DJ Alan Freed. So
you know what? I have heard that.
There you go. So there's reasoning behind it. It's not just that we have this pretty lakefront.
It's a good spot.
So have you ever been to the Rock Hall before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What do you think? You like the exhibits? Is it a good experience?
Great. I mean, it's fun because I'm not much of like a rock historian. For example, our merch guy and Ben he actually went to school and minored in rock and roll history, and he knows all of that stuff.
Not something my college offers.
Yeah,
I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's an odd thing that at Indiana University. And so it was a cool. He's always got these great stories, and we just kind of let him tell us the cool stuff. But it's really fun to just go here and be like, oh man, Prince really did wear some crazy shit. And like, you know, and then you see the costumes for people that you didn't picture as wearing that crazy clothes. And then you see them, and you're like, wow, the 70s were nuts. You know, so it's fun to like see all the instruments and just get a little bit of the history for some people. I didn't know that Johnny Cash loved his bus and
mm-hmm.
like, I practically lived in it. Just kind of fun trivia.
Yes, and for those of you who can't see, the Johnny Cash tour bus is also parked right behind us, and befitting the man in black, it is completely black, which is a beautiful
thing. Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to look at it yet.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And we've got the Women Who Rock exhibit on right now, and
yeah,
lots of other good stuff. So
it's cool.
Always a great place to stop by.
Yeah, I'll go check it out.
So it's got to be interesting for you guys being here at the Rock Hall, because you're one of those niche bands that a lot of people love, but you've never really exploded.
Yeah,
you don't mind me saying that.
Oh,
you know,
no, it's fine.
You don't have a bunch of radio hits or anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, you may be sort of forced into that sort of niche because of the type of music that you play. But you're still a great band with a great history, and in fact, you guys have now been together longer than the Beatles.
Actually, yeah, I think they were only together, what, like 7.5 years?
Just about, yeah, if you want to count the time as the Quarrymen, like 10 years
crazy.
Or so. But isn't it amazing? So what do you think, thinking back on what have you been, 11 years now, 10 years, something like
somewhere
that?
Somewhere between those, yeah.
Okay.
10.5, yeah.
What do you think about your experiences, and, you know, what have you learned going through all those years in the music industry, and is there anything you might do differently if you had the chance?
It's such an odd question, because, like, I'm very grateful for the fact that we have a career and that this has been, it's been the only job I've had for like 8 or 9 years, and it's never been largely financially rewarding, but we've been lucky. When you say a niche band, in a sense, I mean, we survive based on a core group of people being really into the band. Like, we don't have many sort of casual listeners come out to our shows or buy our stuff. It's people who buy like everything we put out, or like own, you know, multiple records, multiple T-shirts. It's I feel really lucky about that, and I wonder if we did anything differently, if we wouldn't have that element, because of my friends' bands that have existed, whether local or national, or maybe they went for it, maybe they had a moment in the sun, maybe they never got one. I feel like we've kind of come out as the lucky ones. I think it's a really hard world to do well in. The music world is brutal, especially in today's day and age where people don't pay for music anymore. I mean, I remember when we started this band, selling CDs was a huge part of our income, and it started to dwindle, and now it's almost not a consideration anymore. Unless you're selling a ton of CDs,
right?
You're not getting anything from that. So, I mean, I'm kind of grateful that we started while that was still a possibility, because we never would have lasted without people coming to the table and helping us out.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. And one thing I find particularly interesting about you guys in that respect, physical media, is that you seem to work really hard to get everything issued on vinyl.
That's my thing, yeah.
Yeah. So is that just a personal preference for you?
I think I remember we'd had our first two albums out for a little while, and then I think with our first album, it had been out for about a year, and I said, I really want to do vinyl. And I asked the label, and they're like, nah, we're not going to do it. It's like, well, can I do it? And so I put it out, and it sold fine, like sold well enough. And this was really before internet was, in my opinion at least, as viable a marketplace as it is now. So I put out our first two records on vinyl, and like they were just kind of slowly make the money back, and it was total vanity. You know, it's just like, I wanted it on vinyl. Like,
right.
This is what I want. And so I like the sound. You know, I listen to a lot of vinyl. And then once we actually started creating our own web store, I run our web store, so anything that like people order, not only am I like organizing and ordering and sometimes working on the artwork for each issue, for each release, we're literally packing them, you know, into the boxes and writing people's names on the labels. And it was just something I did only because when I approached our online merch distributor, they were going to charge people like so much more money shipping, and their markup, it made it too expensive in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, if I just do this, I can save everybody like $5 per record. And I did it simply because I didn't want to overcharge. And then it ended up being the best choice I could have ever made for our band, because we removed the third party. We removed kind of like multiple levels of parties,
right.
And it's just us. It's pretty cool because, one, we have the control. We can put out whatever vinyl we want. Like, we put out this rarities collection just kind of because I had all this stuff sitting around. I was like, you know what? Enough people will want this. I may as well just put it out. And it wasn't like a big cash cow, but it was something. And, you know, it helped keep the band afloat.
Right, right. And, well, that's pretty cool. You can handle everything yourself. And, you know, you're sort of the...
It's our project, you know, it's like, I like being involved in my own, I mean, we created this music, we created this aesthetic, and I don't see why that should stop at, like, putting out the record or that sort of thing. I mean, I need help. I can't be our publicist, I can't market everything, I can't be our publisher, I can't do everything, but I like to be as involved as I can. And in fact, I've never actually met another band. Everyone else I talked to is like, you do all that yourself? You're crazy. But I guess I'm just a busy...
Got a lot of energy. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's it.
So I do want to talk about the upcoming album that you've got going. But first off, I want to ask you a couple things about some stuff you've done in the past. What would you say is your favorite record that you've ever done as a band? And why would you say that?
I think our best record is Red of Tooth and Claw, and for me the reason is that it has my favorite song to perform live, which is Coming Home, which also came out really good on the recording. Many songs don't come out like you picture them when you write them, and sometimes they come out better but different, sometimes they're just different, and that album I just really like. It's the start to finish, it's just... pacing is really strong, in my opinion. I have favorite songs from other records, but that's definitely the one that I feel like I was the most comfortable with my singing. We had a great time recording it. It was cool having a new drummer in the band. Dagan was a great addition. I think that's probably my favorite.
Okay, okay. And speaking of new personnel... you have added a new member just recently. How's that working out?
So far, it's great. Scott has been playing with us on and off. He's played about half the shows for the last year. And it got to the point where we were talking about making a new record, and I was just like, I can just join the band, you know? And so we brought him in as, like, you know, equal member, and he had been in that band, Ockerville River, for 6 years and had... kind of just always been I don't know how to put it, but like now he's playing with us, he's writing with us, he's doing every show from now on, and he lives in Texas, so he flew in to Indiana, and we've been writing for about a month, and we've got 8 songs done, which is really prolific for us because sometimes we work really slow, but I'd prepared a lot of material. And this is probably the first record where I actually think we're going to have more than enough songs. And so we can only pick the best ones to put on the record, which is...
Those are the good ones to pick, yes.
When, I mean, typically, I cut off songs. I mean, if most of our albums have about 10 tracks, 10, 11 tracks. And, I mean, those are the 10 or 11 songs that we did. You know, by the time... it's very rare that we'll finish a song because I'm very critical of our music. Mm-hmm. And so I might have prepared up to 30 fragments of songs but just said, ah, this sucks, like, you know, and I beat up the song, and then it won't make it to the band.
Gotcha.
If I don't feel really good about it. And you know, and there's always going to be tracks on an album that's like not your favorite one, but I go pretty harshly through the editing process, and it's pretty cool to be able to have a new member to write with who also gives his input and says, like, I like this song a lot, or, you know, like, we need to work on this one and change the direction, you know, just sort of that method. And he works in a similar way to us, which is we really talk about what we're trying to convey with the music and what are we really, really trying to say with the song. Because since we don't write pop music, it's... you know, we don't write just like, la la la, I love you, you're so pretty, you know, or like, we don't write I'm awesome songs, you know, we're like, you know.
Something more than just a little bit of a catch and a...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, we try to have like a hook now and again just because that's good writing. But
right.
Like, often like a song can be kind of complex, and there's a couple sort of complex topics on this new record that we're working on that I would have to sit down with the guys and be like, okay, here's the lyrics, what do you think this is about, like, just to make sure that I wasn't going off on some ridiculous, like, artistic quest.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to go out on some, you know, bizarre journey, a spirit quest, trying to write a song that's, like, really about 10 things at once and expect people to understand it. You know?
Gotcha. So if the people in the band get it, then the rest of the audience...
It helps. Yeah, well, they're my editors, you know?
Right.
Or they'll be like, I don't like this lyric. I'll be like, aw. And then I change it.
So then, just talking about your writing process as a band, so you do all the lyrics, is that correct?
Yes, but Sarah has been contributing more lately, and she actually wrote a song that's going to be on this record.
Oh, cool.
Which I love. Well, she started the song, and then she basically did what I do, which is write, like, an idea for a verse and have a chorus and, like, an idea of what the song is about. And then her and I sat down and worked it out and really made it a complete song. So that's a pretty cool thing. I mean, she helped me with some lyrics on the last two records. You know, like, a little bit. So it's fun to have a little more involvement. But this time I'm showing people the lyrics earlier and getting some input earlier than I usually do.
I gotcha. So more in the past it was, you know, you finish the lyrics up, you bring it to them.
Yeah.
This time it's, you start the lyrics off, but then you bring it to them. Is that right?
Yeah, and they haven't really shot down too much. I do like to have another perspective, though. I mean, I like to workshop the songs like you would in, like, a creative writing class. And, I mean, I do so many edits of the lyrics. I mean, it just gets crazy how many times I go through and will completely remove parts from the song and then... Like, I wrote 3 choruses for this one song before I settled on one I liked, and then I just changed it again. And it's like, I'm trying to fit too many words in this, you know? The chorus needs to be streamlined because I'm saying so many... The verses are complex, so I wanted a streamlined chorus, you know?
I gotcha. Well, I think it was Ernest Hemingway who said the first edition of anything is shit.
Yeah.
So it's good to have that perfectionist streak and... Makes your work better in the end.
Yeah. Well, and he's an example of edited writing. I mean, Gertrude Stein and him would just dissect those books down to the cleanest language possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, since we brought him up and since it sounds like you're a bit of a fan, One of my favorite stories about him is when he was living out in Key West.
I've been to that house.
Have you?
Yeah, it's cool.
With awesome.
Polydactyl cats. Yeah. They have like 6 toes.
Okay.
He collected 6-toed cats.
That is a strange hobby, but hey, whatever works, right? Yes. What I was going to say is he disappeared for a day down at the beach, and he was working, and he came back for, you know, dinner and drinks and whatever, and his friend said, did you have a good day? Were you working hard? He said, worked very hard. I said, well, what did you do? He said, I took a comma out. And then I put it back. So that really says something, I think, about what, you know, writers really think about and how they have to hone in to get everything just perfect to make a great work of art.
That's a great quote. I mean, I'll do that too, where I say, oh, I'm going to say this line. No, I'm going to cut it down, do this. No, I'm going to just go back and forth all the time. And it's tough, though, because... I try to really see every side of things. I'm very interested in how something is not innately good or bad. Like, if you view it in a certain light, it can be better one way versus the other, you know, depending on your perspective. And so I have trouble sometimes seeing clearly, but luckily I'm a sort of headstrong, confident person. So it's like if I write something and I know that it's good in my heart, then I have faith in it, you know, and I hope that other people will agree.
Okay. Well, I certainly like a lot of your lyrics.
Thanks, man.
But let me then ask about the actual music process then. So you do write the lyrics first for most of them, right?
Basically write the melody and the lyrics together.
Okay.
And then I'll have some sense of the chords, but pretty simple. And then we'll write all the music as the 5 of us together.
Okay.
And we start by discussing what's the song about. What does it mean? How do we want to evoke it? Do we want to tell? There's a song on the new record that will It's an extremely dark story, but it's a very upbeat sort of like, just like, sort of major rock and roll song, you know, like major key.
Okay.
And it's sort of a departure as a song for Murder by Death, because it's, in a way, like the music is a little less like brutal and dark than some of this music is, but we sort of, the lyrics are so dark, and I thought it'd be a cool contrast to have this dark tale told in a really upbeat manner. So just kind of a fun way of writing a new Murder by Death song. I mean, that's part of the thing is that it's our sixth full length, so part of it is how can we be true to our sound, but also do new creative things? Like, how do we branch out at the same time as not leaving the world that we've created for Murder by Death? So
right, because I think, you know, when people think of you, they really do sort of have that almost dark kind of, strangely operatic kind of a feel.
Yeah, it's
in
a
their
storytelling,
minds.
Dark stories. Yeah, and this is no exception in that regard. Uh-huh. But it was presenting it in a new way, like with a slightly different sound. I'm curious how people will react, because I think it's really strong, and I think if live, people will get really into it. But you never know what, you know. People. One thing about having a lot of albums is that people tend to identify with the one they heard first.
Right.
And depending on when that was, you know, it's like it could be something we wrote 8 years ago, you know? And that's cool, but it's like we continue writing for us as much as for everybody else, you know? We want to write stuff that's interesting and creative to us.
Okay. Well, I know a lot of your stuff does go through.
Yeah.
Hope we're not being drowned out here. I think, well, it's pretty loud, but we'll see what we can do. As I was saying, I think a lot of your stuff does go through sort of a transition over time, me having seen you live several times, and you update things to the way you're feeling at the time. Do you ever, you know, maybe years later, or even just, you know, after you've gotten to play a song out live, sort of look at your old recordings and think, man, I wish I'd done it this way?
Everybody does. Uh-huh. So, yeah. I mean, I'm such a better singer than I was 10 years ago. It's like, I'd love to redo stuff, but you can't do that. It's just like, you move forward. Everybody would hate it because they're used to what they're used to, you know? And I'm just interested in making the music and hopefully people reacting well and enjoying it. I mean, for us, the major experience of our band is the live show. That's what we do more than anything else. I mean, we play like 100-ish shows a year. So, I mean, we record for like a month every 2 years, you know? So, like, the shows are what our real experience is. That's how we connect with, you know, the people listening to the band. So, if people react well to a song live, then I think that's a big success, you know? I like those sort of more like rock and roll, upbeat stuff where people can be like spirited, you know? I think live, that's really appealing.
Right.
I like a good rock show. I feel like there's so few rock bands out there right now. Like, there's a lot of like resurgence in folk and pop and indie pop.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not seeing that many bands out there that are just like, I don't know, they're a rock and roll band. Like, you know, I mean, you can niche a band all you want. You could, I've heard us described as like Southern Gothic. Call whatever you want, but if we're gonna be a more aggressive, like upbeat show than an Americana band that's like on the folk side, you know?
Right.
And we noticed that the music world was sort of lacking, like rock bands that were a little artsier, edgier, and that we consciously decided to try and be a more like, a more rock band, you know, like, do
want to try and move, or is...
I don't know. I mean, I don't have that much time left, actually.
Yeah, I know you got to run and get things done, but...
I have to go do some photo thing in there, so...
Gotcha.
But I mean, you can ask a couple more questions, but...
Well, do you have time to just talk about the new record?
Sure.
Is that cool? Okay. I did want to ask you, because you are right in the middle of working on the new album. Does it have a title yet? No?
Yeah, title usually is the last thing, but we still don't know where or who is producing the record. We're just starting to like really delve into that. We have like a list, and some people have reached out, and I'm curious to see who we end up with. It's going to be someone new. And I mean, we're talking about maybe recording in November, maybe December.
Okay.
I'm hoping to have it out. I wanted to have it out in February, but it'll probably be March. But yeah, we don't really know yet. I mean, right, we're focusing on the writing, you know? It's like, it's the part I hate about being in a band. Like, I don't mind putting out the vinyl because it's kind of like an art project. I mean, you get the art to the cover art together. You put the music in it, and then you order the manufacturing, and there's a lot of paperwork for that. But it's worth it because you have like a tangible thing. But I really don't enjoy trying to find like, oh, which producer, you know, really want. Basically, who thinks the band's cool? Like, finding a label, finding a producer, like, those are the two most, like, annoying things, because you need to find someone that is like-minded and who, like, sees what you're trying to accomplish with your art. But they also need to be, like, presumably capable. You know, they need to, like, have good distribution. They need to have a good publicist. Like, you're both trying to find someone who shares your artistic vision, but also, like... is
business-minded.
Well, yeah, is able to, like, do the best for your band possible.
Right, right.
So it's really frustrating to have to basically, like... It's like being picked in gym class or something, where you're just like, okay, here's our list of producers. Let's see which one of them's actually like our band, you know? It's, I mean, not everybody does, you know? It's
right.
Like,
well, and... you know, with the kind of music that you produce.
It's not for everybody.
Right, well, but even among people who like it and your broader, you know, general kind of music, you know, it's sort of a very specific sound that you've got. And I would think that, you know, it would take somebody who really understood, you know, the almost the epic scope of what you want to do. And that must be hard to just find a producer who really gets
sometimes, you. Sometimes it's been really easy. Like, Jay Robbins was... into it right away, and then Trina Shoemaker, who produced the Red of Tooth and Claw, well, she co-produced it with us, and then she mixed Good Morning Magpie. She just understood our band immediately. She got it right away, and she was like, "Oh, I really like this. And, you know, I see what you're going for." And so she was really great to work with, and I certainly would work with her again in the future. We just figured we'd try something different for this record, just to try it, you know?
Mix it up a bit.
Yeah, just to like, we've never worked with a person for two records, and so to work with her for Good Morning and Red of Tooth and Claw was actually like, you know, we were surprised, but because we always try something new, but she was just so good, she was and great to work with and easy. And
gotcha. And the last time I talked to you, you had I think two songs fully written. What's the progress like now? You sound like you've
got eight?
Okay.
We got eight. The band is finished, and then we're going to go back after this. And I'm going to get two more, and then we take a break for a while. We take, like, 2 weeks off, and we're doing a West Coast tour in an RV that we rented, and we're playing, like, all small cities. Like,
oh, cool.
Visalia, California, like, Bend, Oregon, you know, like, Bellingham, Washington. We're skipping no San Francisco, no L.A., no Portland, no Seattle. Like, the idea is to get to all the places that people don't usually go.
Right, right. Well, on that subject, you guys just did a tour of Alaska.
Yeah.
That must have been an adventure.
It was great.
I don't think they get many live bands from out of state.
They do.
Yeah?
In, like, Anchorage and sometimes in Fairbanks.
Right.
But the places that we were playing were really obscure. I mean, like, out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the shows did great. It was a very successful tour. We had a really great time. We had so much fun. We climbed a glacier with ice picks. We had a great time. I mean, just really positive. And every show was packed. And I mean, there were smaller shows, like 150 to 350 people. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that was the best case scenario, and they were all full. So we're going to go back definitely and try to stay a bit longer and have some more free time.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah.
So I know that that you're going to run, but anything else you wanted to say about the new album? Anything people should look for? Any particular themes or anything like that that are going to come out?
I'm writing the best possible songs I can, and I've spent more time. I think we're working harder than we ever have for a record with this one, and so I hope that it shows that our, you know, that we put our hearts into it and we put a lot of time into it and thought, because it's, you know, it's, this band is a labor of love, and you know, it's interesting because we don't have other people pushing us. We don't have like a major label trying to be like, we need a single, we need this, we need that. Like, we're just writing the songs that we think should exist, and hopefully people will get something out of them.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it, and I know quite a few other people who are too, so
we'll should be pretty good.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely keep in touch. Thanks, and let much. Everybody know. Adam, thank you for joining us on Burning River Fireside Chats. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure. See you around, man.
Thank you.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt-country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.